Okay, yeah. So we're working on the Rush. We're trying to understand this machlokas he has. It's Ostalif, right? Machlokas he has between the Gemara. So the Gemara has these two possibilities of lito alite, right? How do you evaluate sar b'makom nesek? Do you say how much would a person take? That's option A. How much would a person take in order to suffer the pain? How much, right? The Gemara says that's impossible. People don't do that. Right, or the number comes out too high, and he would be a risteacher, tells you you don't do that because it's an outrageous amount. Rather, what you do is you evaluate a different way, is how much would a person give in order to get a pain medication so he doesn't feel it, his hand being chopped off if it's going to be chopped off anyway. Okay. And the Rush brings down, because we've shown him, do you say the same thing when it's just sar alone? Okay, so it's just, let's say, just an electric shock. So the first sheet they brought down, the Rush says that you have to go with option A of how much would a person take in order to suffer the electric shock to go through that, because it's impossible, right? E'efshar lashem osa ben yinacher. There's just simply no way to evaluate it to do a shuma in any other way. Right, and therefore you're forced to go with this this method of how much a person take, even though it comes out to be an outrageously high number, because there's no other option. But the second sheet that the Rush brings down, which it seems like he goes with, is that even in that case you go to the option B of how much would a person give in order to be makil on the mazik, right, to give him a lower amount. And all of a sudden, if it's possible, how do you do it? You say, well, how much would a person pay to not have to suffer this pain? If you were slated to suffer it, king decrees you're going to have electric shock. How much would a person pay to get out of the torture? Right? And our question was, good point. It is possible. Not so complicated, right? You could just do the same thing. How much would a person give to get the pain medication, not to feel the pain of his hand being chopped off? How would a person give not to have to be tortured? Right, so well, why exactly was it impossible, according to the first sheet, though, to do the shuma in that method, right? Okay. So we were thinking about this at the end of yesterday. I was thinking about this overnight. Is that the first sheet in the Rush is holding that what you're doing here is an official shuma? Okay, shuma is a halachic process. It occurs in different contexts. We already came across the one of Shaimin and Lake Eved in the case of Nezek, right? And Rava says you don't do Shuma in Bavel, right? Stavr Shein Lo Kayetz, right? And then Mar says you have to, yeah.
We do Shuma.
Just
don't
collect. Oh, he said you do the Shuma, right? Yeah. You don't pay the thing that's Shaimin and Lake Eved. You're right, correct. You just don't collect, but you do the Shuma itself. So, I mean, because itafas. Okay, good. We have the phenomenon of a Shuma of the Adam, how much is he worth before it's an Eved, after an Eved. Gemara said there's a Shuma by the Behem itself, right? How much does the animal go down, right? You have Shuma when you're Makdish something, and you have to be Pode, Berkechas, you have to go before the Kohen, and he evaluates how much the person's worth. He also evaluates how much the person's, you know, person has a capability, his money, how much he's able to spend. You have Shuma on land, right? So the shuma exists in many contexts, right? By the balchov, right? How much you can afford to pay. These types of things are main thing by the erchin again, right? The shuma is a halachic process, halachic phenomenon. To say the first sheet is holding that what you're doing here, this whole sugya of tsar, is it's a method of shuma. It's a method of evaluating. It's an estimation, and there's a whole process. You get three experts who get together, and they come together to do the shuma, do the the evaluation. And the first sheet is holding is that you can't do a shuma of yiting in the case of just sar. Okay. So the first thing you have to say is that you can't just do a nonsensical. There's two things you have to exclude from the shuma. Why, and therefore makes it impossible. One is it can't be completely nonsensical. You can't say the person is going to be suffering electric shock. He's going to, the king decreed he's going to be tortured. How much would he pay to have the pain medication so he doesn't feel it when he's being tortured? Okay, so even though, like in theory, I guess that's possible, but it's like nonsensical of what kind of idea is that you're being tortured with pain medication. Doesn't make sense. Okay, there's is if there's nezek and tsar, the tsar is an accident, so then you could say, okay, take the pain medication so there's only chopping off your hand, but you don't feel the pain. You can't say that you're suffering the pain with the medication so you don't suffer the pain. Then nothing's going on. That's not a thing. There's no such thing as suffering pain where there's nobody suffering the pain. Right? It basically makes it that there's no pain. Okay? It's just a nonsensical type of evaluation. Which is, I mean, I think you have to start off by saying that. Okay? I'm not fully convinced of it, but it seems to me that you have to, I'm willing to go with it. Okay? The first point. Okay. The second one, and then the more pertinent one to this question, is to say that Shuma is where we place a value. You're trying to figure out the value of something. How much the guy is worth without his hand relative to what he would be worth with his hand. How much this land is worth. How much this person can afford to pay. You know, in terms of to the Bachov, to the Kohen, to the Mikdash, if he's Makdash, all of Nechas, all these types of things. So you're trying to figure out a value or an amount on a entity, on a positive entity. You're giving an estimated value on something. So when you're estimating how much would a person be willing to pay for the pain medication, you're really saying in this context, if your hand's being chopped off, how much is pain medication worth to someone? You know, the average person, how much would he be willing to pay? How much is it worth them to get access to that pain medication? That's a reasonable shuma. That's a reasonable shuma. It's not, you know, it's not a very common case, but it's something that you can put a value on for a person in that situation. But if you're going to give the case of where it's just tsar alone, so what you'd be evaluating is how much would a person pay not to be tortured? Okay. So, I mean, it's true. We'll get to the second case. You know, there is that kind. You can make that estimation, but what are you creating a value for? Right? You're creating... How much, let's say it comes out $100. $100 not to suffer an electric shock. Okay, so now what's worth $100? You can't say like not suffering an electric shock is worth $100. It's just not sensible. There's no entity that has value $100. What is your shuma going on? Right? So you're going to have to come up with something. I think Zed was suggesting it yesterday that apparently a negative shock has a negative value. It's like a negative $100 value. But that's also not a shuma. Shumas don't exist that way. You don't assess negative value to things. Shuma is, in a positive sense, well, how much is this thing worth? So the first sheet is holding that since you're doing a real shuma, you need to assign a positive value to something. By the case of tsar alone, the only way to create a positive value is if in the yito case, you say to somebody, I'm going to pay you. I want you to undergo this procedure. Okay, we'll call it a procedure. It's a nice way to call it torture. Okay, you're going to do this experiment, this electric shock experiment. I want to pay you. How much would I have to pay you for you to subject yourself to this kind of pain, right? We'll put a little MRI things on your head and your brain, little sensories. We're going to see which part of your brain lights up when you run an electric current through your body. Okay, it'll be interesting for the sake of science. How much do I have to pay you to suffer that? Oh, okay, so that's, you know, you want to hire volunteers. Well, not volunteers, but you're hiring people to do it. So there's a cost, and you could evaluate how much that would cost to hire somebody. That's a positive thing. The pain medication, you could evaluate what that is, how much that the sum is. But you can't create a cost. You can't create a cost on how much would a person pay to get out of the torture. There's nothing of value that you're placing the shuma on. Okay? And that's the first sheet in the rush. It basically becomes impossible to do an official shuma on a non-existent thing, on a negative thing. Okay, therefore you're forced to switch to the ETOL framework, which comes out with a very high number, but there's nothing you can do about it. It's the option. Okay, and the kiyivar, which is telling you to be make on the mazik, is when there's two options, then you take the more makel option. But if it's simply yefshar, it's yefshar. It's not like intrinsically impossible to come up with a big number. Okay. For the Rashi way, I don't even know if you can learn this, because Rashi's holding the detail simply doesn't work at all, right? If it simply doesn't work at all, then it's just the Yafshar in that way also, unless Rashi's learning like the second sheet of the Rashi, right? It works for the Rashi because the Rashi holds that the Yitil framework by Tsar alone comes out to be a very high number, and we want to be Makel on the Mazik, but it's not like an impossibility. The guy will give you a number, according to the Rashi, of how much he's willing to take in order to suffer electric shock. According to this, what's the other shita in the rush? The other shita, right? The one that we thought made a lot of sense, right? Where it is afshar, and you just do an evaluation of how much a guy would be willing to pay not to suffer electric shock, right? Totally reasonable. So I think the simplest way to say it is that it's not saying that they're arguing about what is Shuma. Does Shuma halachically require a positive thing or not? You could say that and make it a more general, broad machlokas of a Shuma. And it's, you know, I don't think, again, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with a broad machlokas. As long as you're not going to run, as long as you're not giving a svara that's going to run into other cases. And I don't think so. I'm not sure what other cases of a Shuma you're going to run into. The machlokas is, can you give a Shuma on a non-existent entity? It's pretty rare in this case. It's hard to even think of what a comparable case would be. All Shumas are positive, you know, when I think about them. But maybe there would be another nafkamina. But I think the simpler way to go is just simply to say intuitively is that it's not really a Shuma. That's not really what you're doing. You're not doing an evaluation of a positive thing. You're not getting three experts together in order to really evaluate the value of something. What you're doing is you're doing a thought experiment. It's just simply a thought experiment of how much, if I want to try to monetize the pain, I want to do a thought experiment, which gives me a way of putting a monetary value on pain. But I'm not doing an official Shuma of really, I'm not really saying pain has a certain amount of value, okay? I'm just doing a thought experiment in order to try to come up with some way to think about pain in a monetary frame, okay? And it's a perfectly legitimate thought experiment to say, if you are going to be tortured by the king, how much would you pay to get out of it? And that amount is what I'll say is what the guy has to pay you for the tsar, okay? As a thought experiment, it's perfectly legitimate. It gives a very reasonable answer for how much the guy should compensate you for the tsar. Okay, it's a way of putting a dollar sign on the tsar. And it's true, you don't end up with like a real Shuma giving a estimate on a chefza or a maisa, something concrete. But who cares? We don't really need that. We're not really evaluating tsar as a chefza to the answer. I'm not trying to evaluate pain medication, how much it's worth to a guy. I'm just doing a thought experiment in order to try to take something which is fundamentally a physical experience and not a monetary phenomenon. I'm trying to convert it in my mind through a thought experiment in order to convert it into a monetary phenomenon. And therefore, it's a thought experiment. It's not really a Shuma. You know, but the first sheet is saying, look, it's Shuma, just like everything else. By Nezik, you do Shuma. By Repo, you do Shuma. How much of the doctor bills? So over here, Tsar, it's a Shuma. You're evaluating the cost of a pain medication. How much is pain medication worth to a guy in the situation? That's a Shuma. Okay, but so that's the machlokas here. Is this an official Shuma of Tsar? Or do you say Tsar is not really subject to Shuma? And the whole thing of Tsar is a bizarre phenomenon. You're turning a physical experience into a monetary phenomenon. And therefore, we do as a thought experiment, but it's not really a Shuma. And you don't need the halachic process of Shuma, a positive chalos on something, on a maisa or a chatza. Right? And therefore, the question is it Efshar or Efshar? If it's Efshar, then of course you switch to the framework of Yitain to make on the mazik. And if it's Yefshar, it's Yefshar. It's nothing you can do about it. You're forced to use the framework of Yitol, even by the case of Tzar B'Kneat. Okay. So I mean, conceptually, the difference is if you're saying Shuma, what you're really saying is that this method really is a way of giving value to pain, ascribing a monetary value to pain. It's, in a sense, you're successful. You really are successful at doing what you're trying to do. That everything can be turned into money. And I'm going to turn Tsar into money by using the Shuma. Okay, that's what you're saying if it's a real Shuma. Like it really works. It's just like every other case of Shuma. But then it's got to be a real case of Shuma where you can actually ascribe a positive monetary value to the Tsar that he suffered. Okay, the other way is to say is you can't do that by Tsar. It just doesn't work. It's not subject to, it's not really intrinsically subject to it. Okay. So what we're doing is we're finding a method of compensating him for something that is not essentially a monetary phenomenon. You're doing monetary compensation for something that really doesn't have monetary value. So you have to figure out a way to do that. Like, what is the most reasonable way to give him monetary compensation for physical pain, even though physical pain is not a monetary phenomenon? And you use this thought experiment to come up with a reasonable answer to that problem. It's a reasonable answer. It's intuitive. There's a sense of justice to it. But you're essentially giving him money for physical pain. Does it make sense? No, ayin tachazayin makes sense. That's what you should really do. But there's no, this is the solution. It's a practical solution. He caused you pain, compensate him by giving money. But you're giving money in exchange for physical pain. It doesn't really make sense. Okay, it's not really, you're not really capable of of creating a value on pain. You're essentially giving, exchanging money for something that doesn't really have a monetary value. And the thought experiment is what allows you to come up with some sort of answer for how you should do that. The first answer is saying, look, we'll do a shuma, and the shuma really creates a monetary value on pain. It really does. You know, saying, the question is, how successful is this? You know, or is it just, you know, is it intrinsically nonsensical to take pain, physical pain, and make it into a monetary phenomenon? And then, but I have to compensate them through money, so I'm going to use this thought experiment in order to find a reasonable way to do that. That's the second sheet. First sheet is saying, look, I mean, I know it's complicated and hard and difficult, but look, we're going to use our methods, and we're going to create a framework in which we can ascribe a monetary value on pain. And once I have that, then I can compensate him. It's a question of like, there is a certain ridiculousness in the situation of trying to monetize pain. That's like in this, I think that's one thing that we should walk away with this, like understanding that certain things aren't really subject to being turned into money. Not everything can be put, can't put a price tag on everything, right? That's something that's implicit in the background of the sugya. That's like what Rashi said, that how much am I going to pay you to suffer this pain? Now, nobody's going to do that. You can't put a price tag on how much you're going to pay me to suffer my hand being chopped off. God, people don't do that. Not everything you can put a price tag on. Okay, so in a certain sense, physical pain is like that. It's not something that's really subject to a price tag. But we do Ayin Tachazayin is Mamon. And now you have to, one of the elements of Ayin Tachazayin is the Tzar. And now you have to compensate him through money. That's Gzeiras HaKasuv, that we're using money. That's our Masorah. How do you do that? You know, so one sheet is saying, you really do it. You figure out a way and you actually put a price tag on money. And it actually becomes, through these clever methods, of you actually monetize it and give it a monetary value, and you use a shuma, and you become something of value of, you know, what you took away from him. You caused him this amount of pain. You didn't compensate him for it. Pain has value, or, you know, suffering pain. People could pay him for pain. He pays to get out of pain, however you work it out, depending on the case of makom nezek or not. And then you pay him for it. The other way is saying it's just intrinsically tzar doesn't have a monetary value. We just have to come up with some sort of method of what would be a reasonable, fair way of compensating him for something which intrinsically is not subject to monetary value. You know, you have to use money, but this is not a monetary phenomenon. What do? Use this thought experiment, and it comes out reasonable. There's some intuitive sense of justice because a person would pay that amount in order to get out of it. That's what it would be, and therefore you pay him for it. But does Tsar really have monetary? Can you really put a price tag on Tsar? No, not really. It never really works. Yeah. In a certain way to say it, the question is when you're doing these Chamish Advarim, you're not doing Ayin Tachasai Mamash, you're going to Mamon, and you're trying to monetize things that don't really, they're not naturally monetary phenomena. People, like Rashi says, people aren't going to take money in order to suffer torture. It just doesn't happen. People don't do that. Not everything in the world is a monetary phenomenon intrinsically. Okay? So the question is yes, but if you stuff it in there, can you put a price tag on anything? It was one way or another. Does everything have a price? Okay, there's a svar to say everything has a price. I don't care. You figure out a way in order to make it that person has a price. You formulate the question the right way. Everything has a price, but you're really putting a price on the thing. Okay, and now look, you might have to go to Yitel, and it'll come out an incredibly high price. If I want to put a price on it in this way, I'm going to have to go to this framework. Yeah, and it'll be $1 million. Okay, what are you going to do? But everything has a price, and you have to figure out a way in order to put a price on it. But everything you put a price on, even physical pain. The other way of saying is that no, they're just certain things are intrinsically not monetary phenomenon. So torture is one of those things. Just people don't think of it in that way. It's just not subject to money. You can't put a price on it. You have to monetize it for the purpose of Teshlumen. Yeah, but you got to realize what you're doing. We want to do Teshlumen. We want to do Mamon. And therefore, we're going to find a way to compensate him with money. But that doesn't mean that we're really successful in monetizing something and putting a price on something that intrinsically is not subject to price. It's just that you can't do. And the whole thing is just a thought experiment. It's just a thought experiment more to figure out a way to compensate him in a fair way. But we're never actually successful at truly monetizing physical pain. Because it's not. It's not something that really is subject to a monetary value. That's just not what pain is. Yes, you have to compensate him. The system demands it, but it's never really successful. The first sheet is holding, we do it. Everything. You put it, everything has a price. Figure out a way. formulated. If you have to go really high, you go really high. If you have options, you go by the lower one, but you'll find a way to get a price on anything. And no matter how ridiculous it is, everything has a price. And the other sheet is saying that's not true. Some things are intrinsically moved God, they can't put a price on it, and it's simply how we work at the Teshalim. Okay, so I'd like to take up the last point here is the Mishnah. Why does the Mishnah say lethal, right? Option A, when in reality it's option B. So according to the first sheet in the Rosh, beautiful. Why say lethal? Because in the case of Tsar alone, which is what the Mishnah is talking about, you really do take lethal because there is no way, you can't do the sheet of Yitain because that's not a real Shuma. And the Mishnah formulates it by Tsar alone. By Tsar alone that you have to, how much money would I have to pay you to suffer this pain? Right? And that's the first sheet in the Rosh and everything is beautiful. The only thing in the Gemara is just saying, yeah, but Tsar, the Makom Nezek, how do you do it? Because you want to be making on the Mazik. And therefore, in order to make a lemazik, you switch the framework of Yitin. And that's Avuah de Shmuel, and that's why the whole Gemara is dealing with specifically case of Tsar b'makom nezek. And why does the Gemara have to ask the question? That's the little problem. Why does the Gemara have to ask the question? It says, it says Lital should say Yitin. And Gemara has to give this answer is you take from him what you give to him. Gemara should have just answered, well, that's talking about the other case. It's a little bit dochak at the end of the Gemara, right? The flow of the Gemara. But whatever. I guess it's saying that the Mishnah is formulated in a way of lethal, which in truth applies to the case of Tsar alone, because that's the only thing you do is how much would a guy take in order to suffer the Tsar. And by Tsar Malkom Nezek, even though we flip it to the case of Yitin, how much would he give to get out of the pain, it still fits into the language of the Mishnah, and that's why the Mishnah was able to use one word for both cases. But like you can understand, with that sheet, it's good why the Mishnah used the case of lethal, because that really works by Tsar alone. And the Gemara is like a little bit dochak, but okay. The question I want to deal with is according to the other sheet of the Rosh. I guess is that I think this is the way Rashi probably goes in Rambam. Is assuming you always do the case of lethal, yes, of yitain. You always do the case of how much a person paid to get out of the pain, right? That's what you always do. So why does the Mishnah express it in that way? The Gemara's question is good. Right, it doesn't fit into the Mishnah, and then has to give this convoluted answer of how much he would take from him, what he would give to the king, right? But just to let the Mishnah say, how much would a guy pay to get out of the pain? Why is it formulated in this awkward way? Okay, so Zev is taking the first step you have to take. It's a good step, is that you see from the fact, according to the Shita, that the Mishnah formulated is lethal, and the fact that the Gemara initially proposes it. Following the Mishnah, you could argue, or because conceptually it's superior, is that really the ideal way to evaluate this tsar would be how much a person would take in order to suffer the pain. That really is the ideal way to do it. Okay, now we don't do it because of ki v'chiyiver b'stei acher, right, the gzeiras hakasev, you don't do it that way, and we end up going to yitain, or like Rashi said, just because it's impossible to think about it that way. But that is the right way to do it. How much would I have to pay a person to suffer this pain? And the fact that I switched to the framework of how much would a person pay to get out of the pain, and that's what we end up doing in Lamaisa, the Mishnah is saying conceptually, that's not the way it's supposed to be. So it's formulating it conceptually on the way it should be, even though practically you don't do it that way. Okay. Now, again, it's not completely wrong for them practically, because it could be, like the Gemara says, how much would the Nizak take from the mazik based upon what the person would have to give to the king. So it does work. It's not completely wrong. But the reason why the Mishnah chose an awkward formulation is because it wants to highlight the proper way to have done the evaluation of lethal, which is good. It's a good step in terms of working out the structure of the approach. But in a certain sense, it begs the question, is what I'd like to explain, is why is option A of lethal, why is that conceptually superior? Why should that really have been the framework? Why did the Gemara go to that initially? Why is the Mishnah formulated that way? Where you ostensibly want to interpret it that way. Why is lethal any better than yitain? Right? Why is it better? How much I would have to pay a person to suffer the pain as opposed to how much they pay to get out of the pain? Why is there really a difference? They seem to be relatively equivalent to each other. Okay. So two approaches, okay? I'll try one first, and then I was speaking to Rav Feder the other day, and he gave me a different approach. But I think like this, one approach is that if you think about the two things, the two cases, option A and option B. So option A is how much would you pay a person to suffer the pain? In the framework of compensating somebody, of tashlum into the nizak, that really is the right way to think about it, okay? Because you caused him the pain, right? He didn't ask for it, okay? He didn't ask to suffer the pain. You caused him the tsar, and now how much would you have to pay a person to suffer that tsar? And if you, a person would really, you know, wants $1,000. Okay, so if you give him $1,000, and that's how much a person would take in order to suffer that tsar, everything's all good. You've compensated him for him. Yes, he suffered the tsar, but he was fairly compensated for it, right? And that makes sense in terms of compensation. Now, it's true, he didn't like have the choice to make this deal, but whatever, it's a fair deal that, you know, it's a reasonable deal. You pay a person $1,000 and they suffer that pain, and you paid him $1,000 and he suffered the pain. The problem is it was just bought car, but whatever, it was a fair deal. Okay, and that is the proper method of compensating somebody for tsar. Okay. Option B is a different idea. Option B is you're going to have this thing done to you, tsar. How much would you pay to get out of it? Okay. That's really a framework of padiyah. Okay. It's almost like we're going to say the mazik, right? The mazik deserves to have this tsar done to him because he knocked out the other guy's eye or whatever. He caused the other guy pain. So he deserves to get pain. But we're not going to do it to him because we don't do mamish. So how much should he pay to get out of the pain, right? If you're in the framework of padiya, of him being poed to himself, the mazik being poed to himself from the tsar, the yitain makes more sense. How much would a guy pay to get out of the pain? That's how much we'll make the mazik pay to get out of the pain. And then he'll give it to the nizak, right? But if you're in a framework of tashlumin, of trying to compensate the nizak, then it's how much would I have to pay a guy to suffer the pain that the nizak suffered? Okay. So if you think about option A and option B, it's really, one is option A is a proper framework of tashlum, where you're really compensating the nizak for the money he suffered. Option B is really the framework of how much should the mazik pay to be po'd to himself from having to suffer the pain that he inflicted on somebody else. Okay. And like we saw in the Gemara, the first thing we did, there's really two elements, right? There's the for the rotzeach, you don't take kofar, but for, you know, the other evarim, you do take a kofar. And there is an aspect of padiyah on the mazik. The mazik should be taking padiyah. But makin nefesh, maka behema, maka adam, that just like by maka behema, it's teshlum, and so too by maka adam, it's teshlum. So there are these two elements by chovel. There's one thing that there's a teshlum into the Nechbal, but there's also idea of pedia for the chovel, right? The chovel deserves to have done to him what he did to the other guy. He's poed to himself. He's a kofar. He does a kofar for kofar to be poed to himself. The rotzeach, you don't let him buy his way out. The chovel, you let him buy his way out. And you also have the idea of the nechbal of tashlumin, of trying to compensate the nechbal. Okay, so if the Mishnah had written it in the way of Yitain, the implication would be that we're really using a framework of Padiyah. Okay? We're really using a framework of Padiyah. Instead of the framework of Tashlumin, we're using a framework of Padiyah. But that is not what's going on. Okay? We're not using the framework of Padiyah. The way the Chovel is poed to himself is not by literally being poed to himself. Remember that was Rabbi Eliezer, who learns... Rabbi Elazar was mamish. Remember, Rabbi Elazar said, "Ain tachas ain mamish," and are you going with demei chovel, demei nechbal? So, arguably, I mean, I don't know. It's like hard to know. We don't hold like Rabbi Elazar ever. You know, we never hold like him. But and the Mishnah is definitely not like Rabbi Elazar. But arguably, Rabbi Elazar would say intrinsically, you go with what he should have to pay to get out of the pain, because it's basically padiya. According to Rabbi Elazar, you really are doing padiya. You're being poed at the hand of the mazik. How much is the mazik's hands worth? Not the nizak, the mazik's hand by nezek. And by tsar, presumably you're gonna use the framework of kiyitain, how much you'd have to pay intrinsically, right from the beginning. Because the mazik deserves to suffer that pain. How much does he have to personally pay to get out of that pain? That's the mamish framework. The mamish, obviously mammon, but you're really trying to be poded the chiyuv on the mazik himself. It's a real pedi of the chiyuv. There really is a halos chiyuv of tsar on the mazik and be poded to him. But we're not doing that. The Mishnah doesn't want you to think we hold like Rabbi Eliezer, right? Nobody holds like Rabbi Eliezer. Everybody argues on him. We all hold it's not ein dechazai mamish in any framework at all, right? Torah shvuchsav has been superseded by Torah shvuchsav, and it's always a framework of tashlumin. Right, it's always a framework of the shlumin. And the framework of the shlumin is how much do you have to pay a guy to suffer that pain? Because that's what you did. The guy caused him pain, compensate him by paying him for what he suffered. Because that's the shlumin framework. And now it's true, we calculated by yitin, but we calculated by yitin, like the Gemara shows, the reason we calculated by yitin is because the other way doesn't work. Because it just comes out to be too high an amount, or becomes a guy, people can't even contemplate that question, and therefore you're forced to go to the yitin framework. So the Mishnah is formulating it as lethal because that's the idea of tashlum. And the only reason we're shifted into this framework of yitin is not because we hold like Rabbi Eliezer, that we're doing pedia. We're not doing pedia. We're doing tashlumin. It's just that we're forced to use this method in order to come up with a calculation. And I'll put together a Fader's idea with this. No, hold on. I'll hold on for a second. Okay? That's the first way of saying it, is that the Mishnah doesn't want to formulate as yitin because it doesn't want you to think we're holding like Rabbi Eliezer. That it really is intrinsically should be padiya. We're not doing padiya. We're really doing tashlum. It's just that we have no choice but to calculate it, the tashlum in payment, by a thought experiment of yitin. But it's not really padiya. Even though yitin is what you should use for padiya, and yitol is for tashlum, and you're using the yitin for the tashlum. So it formulates as tashlum, as yitol. Okay, my favorite, I think, wanted to add something. I don't think it's really arguing this, but it's adding an element. Is that, so you have to say like this, is that it's true you should do Yitol. That's really the right framework of doing it because of this Teshlumen idea. The only thing is that you can't make that calculation, right? I think you want to say for Rashi, basically, is that see, according to the Rashi, you're coming up with a higher and a lower amount. So you want to say for Rashi is that Rashi is saying that you simply, people won't accept that, they won't accept that question. People don't take money in order to suffer physical pain. Right? People just don't do that. And therefore, the guy won't give you an answer. How much do I have to pay you to suffer the physical pain? People don't say that. Okay? But people can give you an answer how much they'll pay to get out of the physical pain. But I want to say that they're really equal amounts. They really are the same number. It's just that you have to frame it in the right way in order to get an answer out of the guy. Okay? So, for example, remember that we had that case of, you know, I don't know if I recorded it or not, but, you know, that experiment they did in the prospect theory, right, where the guy walks in, you give him $1,000, mm-hmm. say flip a coin, you either get a, right, either you get $500 for sure, or you flip a coin for another 1,000 or zero. Right, and if you formulate that way, people will just take the $500 and they'll walk out $1,500 guaranteed. But if you formulate the other way, a guy walks in, you give him $2,000. So you make a choice: either definitely you lose 500, or you flip a coin, you lose 1,000 or zero. Then they'll make the risk. They'll do the risk to avoid a loss. People will take a lot of risk to avoid certain loss, but they will avoid risk in order to protect a certain gain, right? Even though it actually becomes, if you think about it, it's the exact same scenario. You know, you can choose $1,500 without any risk, or you can risk between a coin flip between 1,000 and 2,000. And there's really no difference in how you frame it, okay? But people make different decisions, okay? People make different decisions because they perceive based on the reference point, based on different things, they make different decisions of how they look at gains and losses. And even though in an objective sense, they're wrong. That's still not the way people work. So he wants to say that you could argue that's the same thing that's going on with the pain, with option A and option B. It's not really, like, really pain has a certain amount of value, right? If you would pay this amount of money to get out of the pain, right? So then you should be willing to take that much money to suffer the pain. There's no real difference between the two cases. Is how much is pain worth to you? Right? Why should you... You're willing to pay $10,000 to, if the king's going to chop off your hand, you'll pay $10,000 for the pain medication, right? So then why can't I give you $10,000 to get rid of the pain medication? That's how much it's worth to you, right? So he's saying the reason why, really the same thing, people are not rational actors, right? Computers are, and that's why computers do much better trading than people, but people are not really rational, and the way you frame it to them will end up affecting your answer. So the Mishnah is formulating the framework of Yitol. That really is the primary framework we should evaluate it. That's the Teshlumin framework. That's the natural framework. And he's saying the only reason we shift it is because you can't get an answer out of the guy. But the Mishnah is framework formulated in terms of Yitol because we're just going to the other framework to get an answer for Yitol. Like it really is, I think you want to say for Rashi, it really is Yitol. This is really the amount of money a guy would pay to get the pain medication when the king's going to chop off his hand and he's going to suffer the pain. How much you pay for the pain medication? That really is the same amount of money that you would have to pay a guy to suffer the pain. They are equivalent amounts. And the Mishnah is really speaking conceptually. It's true. That really is lethal. The only thing is you can't ask a person the question directly because they won't be able to give you an answer. They'll just say, I'm not taking money to suffer that kind of pain. I don't need your money. So they won't give you an answer. Just no person will give you an answer to that question. But that doesn't mean that, but when I formulate it the other way and the guy says, look, $10,000 for that pain medication. So now we see how much it's worth to him. Okay, and basically it's the Mishnah is going to the other framework just to get an answer. But really that's the answer for the other question of how much I have to pay to compensate the guy for the pain he took. But it really is, this is the number. We're only going to the Etain framework to get a quantitative solution. But then once we do, we say these two things are equal. There's no rational reason for distinguishing between them. Yes, people definitely do distinguish and come up with a ridiculous number when I say, how much do I have to pay you to chop off your hand and suffer the pain? $1 million. How much would you pay for the pain medication? I'll pay $5,000. I'm paying more than that, not a penny more. You know, it's crazy. There's the discrepancy between $1 million to $5,000. It's crazy, right? So that's people's craziness. And that's what his point was. And according to the Gemara, the Mishnah is essentially, we don't recognize people's craziness. It's different than the Rosh. I think it's what works for Rosh. Rosh is really saying there's a higher level and a lower number, and we just take the lower because of the kula. The way Rashi formulated it, it sounds like you can't get an answer if you ask it in formulation A, but we'll get an answer for you asking in formulation B. There's no indication for Rashi that the numbers are different. Okay, so that's the same. The numbers really are the same. And basically, we use we shift the frame of reference. The way you ask the question gives you allows you to get an answer. But once I get the answer, I don't look to people's crazinesses. The fact that you say, look, well, Yitin doesn't make sense. We're not doing Padilla. You got to get the other one. No, we say that halacha goes by rational, like a rational actor. And the fact that people introduced a distortion because the way you frame a question will give you different answers, we ignore that. And we treat that really these two numbers should be identical. How much is pain worth? You know, and therefore I use the framework of Yitin to get a number, but then that really becomes, I use that number for Yitol. I say that's really what's going on. That's how much you really would take. If you could be objective and be a computer, this is what you would say. I'll suffer that type of pain for this amount of money. And therefore, framework it uses as Yitol because you are doing Yitol. You're just using the mechanism of Yitain in order to come up with a number. Okay? That works a much better according to Rashi. The Rashi, I don't think you could say that. The Rashi is really saying these are two different numbers, and there's just two different methods of evaluation, and he's recognizing that people perceive it differently, and that's true, and therefore we'll use the more makel number because of exeris akasav. According to Rashi, there's a default. There's an inability to use the framework, the proper framework, then we use a clever trick of framing it differently to get an answer for the question we really want. The reason why I'm saying is this doesn't work for the Rosh, because the Rosh is saying the reason why we go for the more makel number is because of exeris akasav v'kula. Not because, and which applies in Kol Tar Kula, applies in a lot of cases by the aruga. You use aruga against the field. That's not because of anything to do with this idea of that it's impossible, whatever it is. It's just when there's two frameworks of evaluating, you use the method that's more makel on the masik. This idea, the Rav Feder's idea, is saying that really they are equivalent numbers, and I'm using an alternative method of calculating the number. That works for Rashi. Rashi never makes reference to Ubiya Bristeyach. He's not saying it's the Kula. According to Rashi, the problem is I just can't get an answer for a guy if I ask the question with formulation A. So I'll answer for formulation B and I'll get an answer. But then I'll plug it in to my original question because I know that they should be equal even though the person himself can't answer it. So the answer, it's a nice idea, and it works for Rashi. I just don't think it'll work for the Rashi's formulation. Yeah, and the Rav Feder's answer for Rashi, it also is assuming that Litol is the right framework because it's Tashlumen. Only Rabbi Eliezer is holding its Padiya. But in the framework of Tashlumen, the conceptual way of doing it is going to be, how much should I pay him to suffer this pain? Because that's what you did to him. You just didn't pay him yet. You're paying him after the fact, not before the fact. And it's Bal Karcha. But that's Tashlumen, you know, how much you pay a guy for this type of thing. You're right. And the fact that that even in the framework of Yitim, you make the calculation, you're using the pain sensitivity, right? Ma'unog and Rach and all those things of the Nizak, because it's still compensation. You're not doing Padiya. You know, you're not doing Padiya. Right? Rabbi Eliezer really, I think, would use the Ma'unog of the Mazik, right? He wouldn't use the, that's a great question, actually. Like he uses the value of the hand of the Mazik, he'd use the Ma'unog of the Mazik, for sure. Correct. The fact that we're using the level of Ma'unag and the Rach of the Nizak is because we're not shifting to a framework of Padiya. It's always the framework of compensation, according to everybody, right? It's just that you have to use Yitin, which is really better suited for a Padiya type of a payment for Tashlumen, right? But still Tashlumen, you're going to use the Nizak to make these evaluations. It's just you have to use Yitin because of all the problems, either because Yitol comes out too high or it's just impossible. Okay.